Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never change anything.
All right, we're here for another installment of It's My House as we're approaching 1,500 podcasts on this platform. But in any event, today's podcast is titled Creating Cash Flow Sight Unseen. We're going to touch on probably a couple of short topics because our guest has got a busy schedule today. 619-768-2945 is the live stream call-in number, 619-768-2945. About 3 weeks ago? I don't know. Something like within the last month or so, I was watching some YouTube videos and came across this young lady that was wholesaling property, and I'm going to have her explain what wholesaling real estate is. I want to open up her mic here in a moment. And I was kicking myself because I spent a lot of time over in Germany. I used to go to Germany like every year, twice a year. I would spend about 6 months out of the year in Germany, and I've been in real estate since like 83. But never, and I had wholesaled years before that, but this is about 10 years ago, but I never thought once I can wholesale properties from anywhere in the world. So let's bring her on. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Give us your name first.
My name is Keyshawna Hayward.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Hayward. All right. Thank you for coming on because I know your time's limited today. So people are doing a short thing. We're doing a quick and dirty one today with this guest until we can do an extended podcast with her. Explain what wholesaling is. That's the first thing.
Yes, sir. So wholesaling is basically you're getting a property that is pretty much abandoned, vacant. We call them downright ugly homes. So boarded up, you know, windows busted, all of that good stuff. So you get a home like that under contract for a certain amount, let's say $5,000, and then you pretty much market the property for a higher amount. So let's say I market the property to a cash buyer for $10,000. That in between spread of $10,000 minus $5,000 would be my profit for basically connecting the seller and the buyer.
Okay. Connect. So you're getting it under contract. You don't go to closing, but you pass it off, like you said, to a cash buyer.
Yes, sir. And that's a very important key because, I mean, if the person needs to, you know, go apply for a loan and all that good stuff, then that means that it's going to take more time. The whole goal for this transaction is for it to be extremely quick, about 14 days or so, about 30 days or so. You give yourself to kind of pretty much sell the property, but you're looking for a quick transaction.
Okay. Now, let's go a little bit deeper in here. Now, you were in Germany in the military.
Mm-hmm.
I'm suspecting you were finding properties to purchase online.
No, not online. So my husband's military. We were stationed. We came from Fort Bragg, which is in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and we were stationed to Hohenfels, Germany, for 3 years.
Uh-huh.
So while I was over there, my background is education. However, while I was while we were there in Germany, I really started to research wholesaling and how to get into real estate. It's always been a passion of mine. Just didn't know how to enter. So after my research,
right,
I said, "Well, how can I do this from here?" Which at the time was Germany. How can I do this back in the States? Because I didn't want to do it in Europe. I definitely don't know their laws. But I know that Fort Bragg is the top five. I think it's either one or two biggest military installations in the world. So I knew that there's a lot of people here. So that means to me,
mm-hmm,
it would be a need. So what I did was I pretty much had, we call them a bird dog. A bird dog is somebody who is on the ground. We call them boots on the ground. They pretty much drive around and drive for dollars and look for these abandoned homes that I've mentioned earlier. And what she would do,
mm-hmm,
she was actually military herself. So that was like a good connection. She would write the address down. Let's say she stumbles across a property that's boarded up and, you know, really, really ugly. She'll stop, write the address down, and then she would put it into an Excel spreadsheet and basically shoot it back to me. And once I received that, I pretty much backwards planned, looked on tax assessors and found the owner and kind of went from there. So I had a physical person here in Fayetteville, North Carolina, searching for homes for me, and she would just give them to me, and I would do my magic from there.
Oh, okay. All right. I was thinking that you were finding the deals online.
Right.
With your person. I mean, that's an option also. All right. So.
Absolutely.
All right. So she shot you the information, and you went online and then found the owner. What was your next step? I guess you had to contact the owner.
Yeah, I had to contact the owner. And just to kind of double back to what I just said, you can also – my first deal, though, was online. After I figured out, okay, after I closed on my very first deal, I was like, okay, I need more help. And that's when I sought the young lady to find homes, you know, boots on the ground for me. But my first deal, I got it from an expired listing. So an expired listing basically,
mm-hmm,
means that, you know, for sale by owner, they tried to sell it. It was a triplex and a quad. So it was a multi-unit, and they tried to sell it. It was in a real difficult neighborhood. However, she couldn't sell it. So that means that listing expired, which meant that now she's really motivated to sell because she couldn't do it by herself. So that I contacted her via an expired listing that she created herself. Because it's very difficult for sale by owners to actually sell. And when I caught her, it was like the perfect time where she just needed to sell. She didn't want to sell. She really needed to sell. So just to clarify, you can do this virtually anywhere, and you can find those deals online as well. But, you know, later on I got to my bird dog. So I wanted to clarify that for sure.
Okay. All right. So, Bird, you had a trustworthy person on ground. How did you go about getting your – well – your buyers, because I guess you get two distinct buyers, cash buyers, or if your seller's doing a carryback, you can also pass it on too. So how did you market to get the buyers for your transactions?
Yeah, so the buyers for the transactions, I pretty much do all my marketing online, and I put within my ad, hey, this is a cash transaction, so that the people that are contacting me know that, no, I'm not going to finance it, not for this one. No, I'm not going to do X, Y, and Z. No, I'm not going to wait for you to get a loan. They are under the impression and are very aware that they need the cash basically in the bank to go forward with my what I have going on. So I always market and I market that I need cash buyers and cash buyers only. So nothing, no other financing, simply cash. So that's how I find the cash buyers. And they come in droves because once they figure out that this is a good deal, because essentially you're trying to get a property under contract for at least 70% off. So that means that the end buyer is getting a sweet deal too. Kind of really no matter the neighborhood. I mean, it's just going to be a good deal because you get it so cheap.
Now, what neck of the woods here in the United States, because I've expanded what I do now, but I used to go hunting from, I started in Washington, D.C. with four units, but then I discovered Baltimore, Detroit, Flint, all over, you know, the Rust Belt, where I could, you know, buy a house for $1,000 all day long. But that was my niche. That was maybe about 15 years ago. So what neck of the woods were you finding deals at a wholesale?
Yeah, I was finding deals. I was sticking to this Fayetteville, North Carolina area because I had knew the area. I'm actually from North Carolina. However, this can be done anywhere except for Illinois. They have some statutes that kind of eliminate wholesaling. I guess there were some maybe bad transactions in the past. But this can be done in Detroit. This can be done in those areas where you can a cash buyer will be interested in, because in those areas you can buy low and rent high in the areas of Detroit, Indiana. So a lot of people like those areas. But anywhere this can be done, New Jersey, anywhere this really can be done, and it can be done virtually as well. I think that's the best part, especially with my husband being military and we're moving every 3 years or so. It travels with me, so I can literally do it everywhere.
Boy, yeah, you got. Matter of fact, I haven't wholesaled anything in years because I started going buying land in rural areas by the acre and getting into building stuff. But getting back to, all right, well, now on the YouTube video, so how many transactions? Well, you're doing this full time now?
Yes, sir. I'm doing it full time. So I think I mentioned earlier that I was a teacher. So I was a teacher for about 7 years. Six of those years were in Washington, D.C. at Randall Hollins Elementary, and then 1 year was here in Spring Lake, North Carolina, which is near Fayetteville. Yeah, I do this full time now because it pretty much made sense. Plus, it's something that I'm still in the avenue of helping people as far as, like, these are sellers who, you know, they're stuck because they don't want the home anymore. However, you know, and they don't want to really pump the property themselves, meaning they don't want to sell it. And they don't want a realtor because that's commission. So they just say, they just leave it. So
have you thought about, because you're an educator, opening up your own school? Like, you can do it online, because I'm in the process of actually we've opened it up, but we're doing the curriculum now. But yeah, because you're a good communicator, and there are people out there that would probably love to have you teach them how to do that. So, I mean, there are courses that you can put on Udemy, or you can open up your own school on Podio or Teachable. Thought about something like that?
Definitely. So I'm actually, after being on JC Hustle's channel on YouTube, it pretty much propelled me to even challenge myself. And he was like, hey, go ahead and get this stuff together, because
I saw you on, matter of fact, the very first time I even ran across his channel, he was interviewing you. And that interview, I started to check out some of the other things on his channel. But so far, I haven't looked at all his videos yet, but so far, the best video that I've seen on that channel has been yours. And for two reasons, because there's a gazillion people talking about wholesaling. But the way you break it down, I mean, like I said, you were in Germany and did this.
Yes, sir.
I used to be in the D.C. school system, so I can relate to that, too.
Definitely.
But you're definitely an educator, and you're putting out information that's essentially is not going to be found in public schools, private schools, charter schools, or even Harvard or Yale.
Right.
So that's why I wanted to have you on the podcast today. Let's see. Now, I know you got a short term because you got to do your business.
Yes, sir.
And we got about 14 minutes left. So let me know. We'll run out of this. We'll end this in 14 minutes. So just let me know. But
okay.
Well, now for a person that wants to start wholesaling, what would you mm-hmm. recommend some of the first steps that they start taking?
I would recommend that they really just start. A lot of people ask me, do I need an LLC or any type of entity to create before I begin? And I tell them that's a double-sided question because I would say no in the beginning because when I first started, I didn't necessarily have an LLC or anything. I just started because they call it analysis paralysis, basically meaning – you can do as much research as you want, and then you're still stuck and never actually jump, never actually act. So for that, for my personality, I was just like, I'll do some research, and then I'm jumping. And it worked out for me, and I'm not telling everybody to do that, but it is important to just start, and that's my point with it, just to start. And once you get your first deal, then you can kind of create some entities. I would suggest eventually, though, getting an LLC, just because that heightens your level of professionalism and it gives you just even playing ground because you're contacting owners and you want to make sure that they know, hey, I'm serious, I take this serious, and this is my actual business, because they'll check you out. They'll look at your email, your website, all of that stuff, which is a part of some steps mm-hmm. I would suggest as well. Getting some business cards, getting your website together, because they're going to check you out to make sure you're legit, because there's a ton of scams going on. This is not one of them, but they don't know that. So that's an important step. I will also suggest to drive for dollars. What that means is, like I mentioned earlier, you're going around physically with your car, and if you're overseas or if you're in a different area or different state, you can have somebody do that for you. And how I pay my my bird dogs, basically the people who drive for me, I pay them 10% of my closing. So whatever home they send to me and I close on, I'll give them 10%, which is a sweet deal just for driving around, in my opinion. And they another thing I would mention as a good tip, it would be to try to connect with people who already do this, already drive for a living, meaning, you know, your post office folks. I have a Lyft driver that drives for me, and she finds properties for me, and she just shoots them to me. So that's something that they already do. They're going around the city, you know, and that's a good way to generate some homes to actually even research. So those are some good beginner steps I would suggest.
Okay, excellent. Now, you got a property under contract. How do you protect the deal? How do you keep somebody from going around your back?
Right. So the fact that I haven't had that happen, and the fact that you are getting the home under contract with the owner kind of protects that. And in my mm-hmm. clauses, I say that, you know, I'll have the home. I give myself 45 days or less just because some things happen and some things need to be worked out as far as with the title. So that gives it enough buffer for me to close the deal. It doesn't ever take that long, but just because, you know, the legalities of it. But because it's under contract, typically owners respect that and they just wait. And if you're contacting motivated sellers anyway because you know, they need to sell the property. So they'll wait it out, like, okay, I'll wait till the 45 days is up, and then I'll move on to another person. And that's a part of my clause as well, clauses I have in my contract to say, I'm selling this property for this amount of time. After that time is up, you can do it as you please, but this is my deal. Another thing or another way to protect it is you must keep the buyer and the seller separate, if that makes sense, because if they meet, then there's no reason for you. So if the I've had one instance where the seller wanted to go to the property the day I was going to show the property to a group of buyers, and I'm like, no ma'am, you know, you know, I got it, you know, I'll take over this, because I'm like, you know, that could ruin the deal, because if the buyer sees the seller, they could just say, well, hey, how you doing? I'll just buy it directly from you, and I don't need Keyshana. So those are two ways to try to protect and safeguard your deal. There are a lot of wholesalers. So I think I had one time where somebody double signed, but that'll all come to light when the title work is in. You'll know if, multiple people sign the contract, and you kind of deal with it from there. But yeah, those are two good ways I protect the deal.
All right, let me ask you this. This is still on a protection thing. Now, do you do an assignment or do you do a double closing?
No double closing. I've never done a double closing. I do an assignment. It's just how I've done it, and it's really easy. It's smooth. It's seamless. It's boom, done.
Okay, because the reason why I was asking that, because with a double closing, they hit you up. They eat up your profits, as you know.
Yes.
Because double closing costs double everything, so that reduces your profit. However,
right.
When an assignment, let's say you get the contract property under contract for, I'm using easy numbers here,
$50,000. Mm-hmm.
And your and you're selling it to your buyer for, let's say, $80,000.
Mm-hmm.
But on the HUD-1, they see, your contract, that's another thing. On your contract, some people have and/or signs to their buyer, or some people just put place in an escrow. So how do you do that? Because some people don't even do the and/or signs. They just put it in the contract and then the title company takes care of it.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I say and/or signs just for my protection. And also, I'm very upfront with the seller. Say, hey, I have some interest in the property, or I can pass it on. That's where that clause and/or signs comes in handy in my contract,
right.
Because I don't want to ever leave them on and say, well, I'm purchasing it, because then they're going to be like, well, why haven't we closed on it? They know that I'm pitching it to my cash buyers, and I have a list of cash buyers that I'm pitching it to. So they're not really hung up on the time it takes to sell the property. And then to answer your first question, the assignment fee that I received, it's just real easy where that clause allows me to do so. And with your example of $50,000 with the seller and $80,000 with the buyer, I signed two different contracts. The first contract is the purchase and sale contract with the actual seller, and then the assignment contract with the buyer. So it says two different things. So the buyer is under the impression that he is purchasing his property for $80,000. He doesn't know that I have another contract. Well, he does know, but he doesn't know what the amount is that I have under contract with the actual seller for $50,000. So they signed two separate contracts, and at closing on the HUD-1 form, it'll have, my company's name at the bottom, and then it'll have my assignment fee.
Right. Well, your interest is in the contract, because basically what you're doing is you're essentially selling your contract, which is
correct.
Which is wholesale. Yeah, that's wholesale.
Yes, sir.
So that is your interest in the transaction.
Yes, sir.
I'll frame it that way. So on your typical day, how many deals that you might look at? I mean, how much time do you spend daily working on this?
Right. So daily, I would say about just because I have a little one, she's 3 and she's at home with me, I would say about 8 to 10 hours a day. And what I'm doing is not necessarily what I'm doing is. Number one, I'm hustling, but I have to cold call. It's a lot more in it than just getting a homeowner contract. I have to cold call these sellers. I have to drop for dollars. Like after I get off the phone with you, I'll drop for dollars a little bit. So there's a lot within my day that I would have to do in order to potentially get some deals within the month. So my goal every month is about 3 or 4 deals every month, so that it propels me for the next month, and it kind of just rolls over every single month, if that makes sense. But, yeah,
now,
it's about 8 to 10 hours of real estate.
Okay, so you say about 4 deals a month. So that without revealing what you make, which is none of our business, it's different for everybody. But potentially, if a person puts, some effort into it, let's say 2 transactions a month.
Okay.
What kind of money could they potentially make? Just hypothetically speaking.
Hypothetically, they can make anything they want, and this is why. because you pretty much choose your assignment fee. So if on a deal, I'll give you an example. So I have a 7-unit that I'm assigning to an end buyer, and that transaction will be a 5-figure deal because I pretty much say I know I run my comparables in the area, so I know how much the property is worth, and then I know how much I have it on the how much I need to get it under contract for, and then how much I want to get out of it, my spread. So really, it's up to you as far as how much you want to make. It could be $2,500. It could be as much as I've seen assignment contracts $40,000-$50,000. It just depends on your area as well. So that's a lot of factors in play. But really, you choose your assignment fee, whatever you're wanting to charge. But the numbers have to make sense in real estate, as you already know. It's a numbers game. So if the numbers don't make sense, then you can't make, you know, $100,000 out of a property that is only worth two. So the numbers really, you know, totally have to make sense. And the repairs have to be incorporated into your formula. So definitely.
Let me ask you this, because we got about 3 minutes left. What e-commerce platforms do you market your properties? Or what do you suggest? Now, for me, before you answer, I've had success with eBay, and I've had success with Craigslist, although what I would do on eBay, because we were auctioning houses on eBay, and then on Craigslist, rentals work. So everybody has their favorite platforms based on what they do. What's good for you?
Yeah, what's awesome for me has worked like a charm is Facebook Marketplace. I used to do a little bit of the Craigslist, but then it kind of got a little bit of like I was wasting my time just because it could be a scammy, not all the time, but you have to really sift through like, okay, is this person correct or real or whatever? And then same thing with Marketplace, any of them. But I found my most successful platform would be Facebook Marketplace. Those are where I found all my cash buyers. That's where it works like a charm for me.
Okay, well, we got about 2.5 minutes left. All right. First thing, are you available to coach people or anything like that? I listened to your podcast. I don't know if you've done anything since then, because you definitely are an excellent educator. So how can people get in contact with you or learn from you or anything, like listen to your podcast or what have you?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. So you can find me on Instagram, ASAP Home Investments LLC, or you can find me on Facebook, ASAP Home Investments LLC. Also, I'll be doing an online course that will be coming out. I'm going to try to drop it on Black Friday. I just have to upload all the content onto a platform. I might just only use my platform, so that will be coming, and the link and all the information will be coming soon. I'm doing consultation calls, 1 and 2 hour on Calendly, and you can book that as well. But those are the ways people can contact me.
Boy, okay, I might be dropping it on some of those, because like I said, what I've done is the last few years is I've gone rural, so I figured, you know, let me buy acres, which is cheaper than buying something in the city, and then build small structure, you know, coming out that kind of stuff. All right, well you. That's the contact. We can reach you. Give that information again for Instagram and Facebook.
Yes, sir. ASAP Home Investments LLC on Facebook and then ASAP Home Investments LLC on Instagram. You can also, I didn't include my email. You can email me. That's khayward@asaphomeinvestments.com.
All right. Excellent. YouTube channel.
Yeah, I don't have a YouTube channel, but you can check out JT Hustle's YouTube. I'll probably be doing another one with him pretty soon and just kind of try to find where it talked about a teacher making, you know, X amount in 7 months. So that was one of the videos that we did.
Oh, now you mentioned you were in the military. Suggestions, because I know one of our listeners right now was former military. Any suggestions for people that are getting out of the military or out of the military, or vets that are looking for a way to earn income? Any suggestions for them?
Absolutely. And first of all, happy Veterans Day. My husband actually retires this year, so he's in that transition process. And what I would suggest is to start in real estate because he's, and I know his mindset is, you know, he wants to chill. He doesn't want to take orders. He wants to be his own boss. And this is a great opportunity for you to do so because you're creating your own hours. You do have to hustle a little bit, but it's at your own pace. So definitely get into the realm of real estate, whether that be you have a little nest of money and you could be a cash buyer or you're interested in wholesaling. Either one of those opportunities are great for veterans and the way to start. And, again, you can start anywhere, so that's another added bonus to it. So just definitely start, and wholesaling is a great avenue to even learn about real estate and to get your feet wet in all different avenues of real estate because there's a ton of ways you can do this thing. But it's definitely lucrative and a wealth builder for all.
All right. Well, thank you. We ran out of time. It's we done 30 minutes here. So, and we call this podcast as a trilogy because we want you back for a more extended podcast. So I'll be in touch. Thank you once again. And people, you can contact her directly through Instagram, Facebook, you know, all of the, everything she mentioned. On that note, matter of fact, I'm going to start looking for something to old because I haven't wholesaled in a long time. But you've got me motivated through that. That's why I called today, creating cash flow sight unseen, because I'll be looking for stuff online. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.